So I have everybody's attention now.
In anybody else's hands, this is a microphone. In my hands, it's a pipe bomb.
I am a threat, because I represent a threat to the life that they have embraced, and they know it's a lie.
Ridicule is one of the most potent weapons we can use.
This ain't about the goddamn money. It's about a goddamn principle.
Hey, this is Tara Spencer-Nairn from Corner Gas, and you are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show.
What's this American dream? I see American dream. Cause no one's happy in their first world problem. Money in the bank. Silver on your bank. You're getting dizzy cause your body's gonna solve it. Don't waste your breath around me.
Strutting and strolling, ramming and jamming. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. Yes, it's Casey Ferguson here, half stiff and ready to riff on episode 30 of The Casey Ferguson Show. My, how time flies. Failure Anthem kicking off the show there with First World Problems, which I suppose in many ways I've been having a lot of lately. You see, Wildcats Motel Ferguson is under siege. The powers that be, in their infinite fucking wisdom, decided that the middle of winter would be a great time to install new windows in the apartment building that houses Motel Ferguson. So, in addition to the regular douchebaggery I have to contend with, like methed up neighbors and drunken students hollering in the streets, now I have to contend with more banging and drilling than a John Holmes movie? Fuck that shit. Since it's damn near impossible for me to work from home, I've been forced into making other arrangements. Luckily for me, the cats at Muziki Cafe have allowed me to commandeer the upstairs of their kick-ass coffee and whiskey bar while it isn't being used during the day so that I can keep putting boots to asses and emptying glasses here on The Casey Ferguson Show. So, I certainly want to extend my deepest gratitude to Chris and the Wildcats here at Muziki for hooking a brother up. So, do me a favor, if you happen to be kicking around in downtown Kingston, show these cats some love. Drop in for a beverage or stop by for some live music, which they have every night of the week. They've also got the biggest selection of whiskey in Kingston. Just saying. You didn't think I just picked this place out of the fucking hat, did you?
And may I say that I often find you the source of many well-put and witty things that you say.
Anyhow, those of you who've been listening to this program for a while may notice a bit of a difference in the sound of the show while I'm gabbing away. A little echo or voices and music in the background, or perhaps some construction noises. Well, that's because I'm recording this show here at Muziki while the business is open and in a much bigger room than that of Motel Ferguson. It's still a fuck of a lot quieter than the din going on back at the homestead, so I don't want to hear any fucking pining from you audiophiles out there. It was either deal with a bit of background noise here, or put the show on hold, so don't get your goddamn panties in a bunch. With that said, I got a keg full of kick-ass ready for consumption here on episode 30. My guests on this episode are the Casey Ferguson Show, Reese Winans, legendary keyboard player of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble, Joe Bonamassa, and countless others. Grammy Award-winning vocalist Alana Miles will be here, and I believe Kingston-based filmmaker Brent Nurse may be joining me a little later on, so stay tuned for that. I've also got music on the way from Jack Russell's Great White, 88 Mile Trip, Logan Brown, Raven Eye, and more. Let's light this motherfucker up. This is Edmonton's own Striker with Born to Lose on the Casey Ferguson Show.
Tough guys in trouble times, the different points of view.
You're listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. Decibel Dealin', you are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. From their latest album, Nova, that was Raven Eye, Come With Me, before that, brand new music from Straight Line in Holy Wars, and kicking off that set was Stryker with Born to Lose. Speaking of Born to Lose, I used to work with this guy. For the sake of the story, we'll call him Alan, although that's not his real name. Alan had a lot in common with Pigpen from Charlie Brown. Mainly a stink cloud seemed to follow this foul-smelling son of a bitch wherever he went. Listen, we all smell from time to time. Maybe one day you woke up late and didn't have time to grab a shower before work or whatever the fuck, but not every day. I worked with this pungent prick for years, and he always smelled like a dead hooker's asshole. It's not like he didn't know or that no one informed him, both delicately and not so delicately. Now, he claimed that he had some kind of shit wrong with the pores of his skin, so deodorant and other such products were easily defeated by his stench. Okay, so what about the mouthful of brown beans he had in his grill and the ever-present ball sack breath? Halitosis, he claimed. Well, if that's true, that explains why his breath stinks, but I dare say he still could have brushed his teeth, and that way they wouldn't turn a sorry-looking shade of green and fall the fuck out. Listen, I don't claim to have a movie star smile, but I'm past this motherfucker by a mile. Not only did this noxious Nimrod have excuses for his horrendous hygiene, he had excuses for everything. Why he left early, why he was late, why he left all the work for you. And when you asked others who were at the scene of his crimes about his fallacies, you would inevitably find out that while some of the things that he spoke of had in fact happened, they didn't occur on the same day or in any way close to how he described them. Believe it or not, this rank rock-headed reject still works in this kitchen and occasionally even prepares food for the public.
Isn't there a law or something against retards serving food to the public?
Well, thanks, ought to be.
This story gets better, or worse depending on how you look at it. I'll tell you more about Alan, the putrid potato head, later on in the show. Let's get back to the music. This is Jack Russell's Great White, Blame It on the Night, right here on the Casey Ferguson Show.
Is this
rocking and grinning, sinning and winning. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. From the album Blues of Desperation, that was Joe Bonamassa with Distant Lonesome Train, and before that was brand new music from Jack Russell's Great White, Blame It on the Night. My first guest on this episode of The Casey Ferguson Show is legendary keyboardist Reese Winans. He's played keys for the likes of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble, Brooks and Dunn, Los Lonely Boys, and Hank Williams Jr., among others. He's also a past Grammy Award winner and is nominated at the 2017 Grammys for Best Traditional Blues Album as a member of Joe Bonamassa's band. In the first part of this conversation, Reese and I will discuss the Grammy nomination, music education, and his thoughts on Blues of Desperation, among other things. We'll cover his time with Stevie Ray Vaughan in the second part of our conversation, which will most likely appear on my Amherst Island radio show in early March, so don't worry, there will be plenty of conversation about Stevie Ray. In the meantime, we are Go for Joe. This is the first part of my conversation with blues legend and keyboardist extraordinaire Reese Winans on The Casey Ferguson Show. All right, this is Casey Ferguson. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. I have legendary keyboardist Reese Winans on the phone. What's going on, Reese?
Hello, Casey. How's everything?
Oh, man, any better there'd be two of me.
Well, I've got a couple of weeks off. I'm just kind of chilling out here at my house in Nashville. It's chilly down here today. Looking forward to heading back out on the road in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Folks listening, what Reese is referring to, he's going to be heading out very soon with Joe Bonamassa. Their North American Spring Tour begins February 13th in Reese's home state of Florida and ends up March 18th in Minnesota before heading to the UK and Europe in April and May. Now, Reese, as I mentioned, you grew up in Florida and attended Florida State University, where you majored in music, but you left after 2 years, and, you know, suffice to say, you've done just fine without a degree. I've long maintained that music education is certainly helpful. You know, live performance is really the best teacher. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that college isn't for everyone, and when I was over there majoring in music education, I realized pretty quickly that that's not really what I was cut out for doing. I wanted to be a performer. I wanted to play music, and at that time, they weren't really offering a very well-rounded selection of music over there at Florida State. You could either specialize in classical music, or there was a bit of jazz, and I like playing classical music. I like playing jazz, but my favorite thing to play is rock and roll and the blues and soul music, and there was none of that going on at Florida State University at that time, at least nothing that you could study. The cool thing that I learned about in Florida State was that's where I first joined a band, started playing in this band called The Prowlers, and we went around doing fraternity parties and playing cover songs from the day, like Kinks and the Rascals and those Rolling Stones and stuff like that, and I realized that I really liked doing that kind of thing, and that was sort of the start of it for me. As far as what do I think of music education plays a role? Absolutely. And that being said, you know, some people say, well, you have to take lessons, you have to learn how to read music. Well, some of the best players that I've ever worked with don't know how to read music, so I think you have to have the music in you, and if it comes out through training and classical, if it comes out through jazz, if it comes out through rock, that's just the way it's going to go. I think there's a place for music education, and there's a place for live performance and learning as you go. And you have to just decide what's the right thing for you.
Well, it's the thing. Really, what we're talking about is developing your ear, and there's certainly a number of ways to do that. It could be, you know, through music education and lessons and things like that, or, yeah, just getting out there and doing it and listening to records, you know? I mean, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Absolutely. For me, and I can just only speak about my own experience, music education and playing music that's written down was really great for my chops, really great for working up a great technique on the piano. Playing live was great for my imagination and stirring my soul and allowed me to get off the written page and then to experiment into different kinds of things that would just happen on the spur of the moment.
Well, now, Reese, you've been doing this a long time, so, you know, have you had any arthritic issues?
There's a couple of minor things starting to crop up, but nothing that's worth speaking about.
High five.
Reese, you don't strike me as the kind of cat that fusses over things like chart position, but, you know, it had to have been gratifying to have Blues of Desperation debut at number one on the Billboard Blues Albums chart.
Well, you know what? I've had a couple of albums that have, during my career, I've been lucky enough to play on a lot of records. The thing about Joe Bonamassa is, I think he's a little different than most of the guys I've been playing with. Most people want to get a hit record and get a lot of radio play, and Joe kind of thinks of himself, I think, as sort of an outsider, and saying that any kind of recognition is an extra added bonus for him. He does just as well without a hit record as he does with a hit record, but to have that kind of recognition, to have so many pre-sales that your debut is number for one, was really a feather in his cap. And I thought Blues of Desperation was a terrific record, and I was real proud of that. Now, I don't know if you'd heard about it, that we had another record come out this past year called Live at the Greek Theater, and that's up for a Grammy nomination. So finally getting some recognition, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, congratulations on that, Reese. That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
Definitely love the record. You know, to be honest with you, this is sort of the record that I've been waiting for Joe to make. I just think, you know, the songwriting and everything has really grown by leaps and bounds. And I mean, he's kind of been doing that record to record, but I just feel like there was a real kind of quantum leap, with this album.
You know, I thought the same thing. I thought the writing on this record was really strong, and he had some co-writers that he's been using, and I thought they really stepped up to the plate, that everybody really stepped up to the plate on this. And it was an interesting record to make. Kevin Shirley, our producer, had this concept of the two drummers, you know, Greg and Anton, and the bass in the middle and sort of the guitar all around it. Not a particularly keyboard heavy record, but that was the concept of it. And the story of the recording of the record is kind of interesting. They had picked a time to record where nobody was doing anything, and of course, you know, when you have a time on your calendar where nobody's doing anything, some guys book stuff. And so I had booked a gig up in Canada to play with a friend of mine, and sure enough, they booked this recording session for Blues of Desperation during that same time. And so I was unavailable for the session, could not get out of the tour. So they went ahead and did all the tracks without me. And I got down there and listened to them, and I just thought it sounded great. I went in and overdubbed for a day and put the keyboard stuff on it that was on there. But the concept was the two drums sort of opposing each other, the bass in the middle and the guitar as the umbrella over the top. And I thought it really worked out great. The songs are strong. We play most of the whole record every night.
I mean, I guess you've done a fair bit of that as a session player, putting your stuff in on top after the tracks are done. But, you know, it really...
It's not my favorite thing to do. If I had a choice, I'd much rather be there, participate, and have the back and forth going on with the musicians while it's going on. It makes such a big difference. But it worked out all right for this one, and everybody's happy with the sound of the record. I think it sounds great. I think the songs are good. Really looking forward to doing another record later on this year. We're going to get back in the studio again.
Yeah, you guys are really cranking them out.
Cranking them out, that's right.
Just as it should be, man, you know, and I really love the record. You know, I think Kevin Shirley did a great job with it. And, you know, I know he's a guy who likes to see the band playing live, you know, when he's like listening back to playback. And, you know, even though you did your tracks after, I thought, you know, you were definitely able to hone in on that vibe and, you know, capture something special there.
Yeah, well, I like to think that I added something to what was there. You know, the keyboards have a pleasant sound to me, and I think almost every song has to have some sort of a keyboard part in it. I think it worked out great.
Well, and I mean, I always, you know, I love pretty much everything you've done, Reese, but, you know, you're playing on Livin' Easy. You know, it's just got such a great vibe and that, you know, just that old school piano playing and whatnot. I just thought that was such an incredible track.
Oh, man, that thing was so fun, man. And it was such a lazy, minor blues. And, we were in the studio and I was just plunking on this upright piano. And Kevin said, well, that's it. I want you to play that on this blues tune. And, so it was this sort of out of tune upright piano. I think I did one pass at it, and it was just the best, man. It just worked out great. And they had this whacked out sax reverb, way off in a reverb that I was just kind of playing around with what he was doing, and I thought it worked out magically.
Absolutely.
Part talk show, part rock show. You are listening to the Casey Ferguson Show. That was the first part of my conversation with legendary keyboardist Reese Wynans. As I mentioned earlier, Reese is up for a Grammy at this year's Grammy Awards for his record Live at the Greek with Joe Bonamassa. Best of luck, lads.
You can do it!
For tour dates and all things Reese, check out reesewynans.net. I will have more from that interview on a future episode of the Casey Ferguson Show. In the meantime, let's get back to the music. Here's another track featuring Mr. Reese Wynans on the keys. This is Joe Bonamassa with Livin' Easy on the Casey Ferguson Show.
She won't drive a Cadillac unless it's new. She says gold is just is a place to put my jewels. I work double shifts for one more pair of shoes. Just living easy's getting hard to do.
Tara Holloway, and you're listening to The Casey Ferguson Show.
sure she don't hang up her skirt like I do. Just for you.
Ferguson Show.
I was looking for a sign in the time of retribution. I didn't mean to be unkind, but everybody let me down. I need to shed my skin, find another.
willin' and all can killin'. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. The latest single from Matt Blaze there, Set Me Free. Before that was Ottawa's own Tara Holloway with Radio Station. And kicking off that set was Joe Bonamassa with Livin' Easy. I'm well aware that I haven't finished my story of Alan the Putrid Potato Head yet, but I want to get to this while I'm thinking about it. Recently on Facebook, there was finally something of fucking interest for me. I noticed numerous people sharing lists of 10 albums that influenced them as a teen, and rather enjoyed reading them. The only thing is, when something sweeps Facebook like this, I get a slew of messages from people asking me why I'm not participating. Well, as I've stated before, I'm not much of what people might call a quote-unquote joiner. But since so many of you seem to be interested in my list, I'll share it here. And if you're pissed off that I didn't just post it on Facebook, go fuck yourself. The only fucking reason I am on Facebook is to advertise this show. I could give a rat's ass what people are doing or eating for dinner, and I have better things to do than look at your narcissistic fucking collection of selfies. Unless, of course, you're Elvira or Linnea Quigley or something, I couldn't give a flying fuck about your fucking pictures. I'm not self-absorbed, you're just not that fucking important.
That's right. I said it. I meant it. I'm here to represent it.
Anyhow, my list of 10 albums that influenced me as a teen is as follows. Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction, Silverchair, Neon Ballroom, Nirvana, In Utero, GNR Use Your Illusion 1, GNR Use Your Illusion 2, Bon Jovi Crossroad, Aerosmith Big Ones, Bush 16 Stone, Johnny Lang Wander This World, and Green Day Dookie. I have a few honorable mentions as well. The Offspring Smash, Buckcherry's self-titled, Van Halen's first album, AC/DC Live, Led Zeppelin 4, and Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, and the Infinite Sadness. Feel free to send me your lists on Facebook at The Casey Ferguson Show. Let's talk more rock. This is Gabriel and the Apocalypse with Behind the Sun on The Casey Ferguson Show. More of The Casey Ferguson Show? You can download all episodes of the show at CaseyFergusonShow.com. Plus, bonus content, prize giveaways, polls, and much more. Only at CaseyFergusonShow.com. One more time for the hard of hearing, that's CaseyFergusonShow.com.
Ow. don't think twice. When I come to trouble, baby, well, I paid a price. I let my guard down. I've been caught. There ain't a lesson, baby. I ain't been tore. Come on, trouble.
Too cold to hold. You're listening to the Casey Ferguson Show. Some acoustic Lana Miles for you there from her latest album, 85 BPM. That track is called Trouble. Gabriel and the Apocalypse in there as well with Behind the Sun. So earlier in the show, I was telling you about Alan, a former co-worker with a complete lack of work ethic and a vomit-inducing smell that fell, by my estimation, somewhere between Burning Roadkill and Honey Boo Boo's thong. As if it wasn't bad enough that this pig-shaped puddle of panty slime would go home after throwing a hissy fit because someone turned the radio station in the kitchen, it turns out he was a thief too. Somehow, this odorous oaf got himself hired at a second place of employment, a place called Value Village. For those of you who don't know, Value Village is a thrift store chain offering secondhand shopping. Some of you outside of Canada or the Pacific Northwest may know Value Village as Savers. Anyhow, Value Village receives its merchandise by paying money to nonprofit organizations for donated clothing and household items, and through direct donation by individuals. A lot of this shit is coming from estates and people who couldn't sell this junk on eBay or Kijiji, but I digress. Company policy at these places is that staff can't cherry-pick merchandise. The goods have to make it to the sales floor after being assigned a dollar value, and then the staff can purchase them when they aren't working. Well, this sticky-fingered sandbag decided that he couldn't take the chance that some other fucking moron might want to buy a Nintendo GameCube that may or may not even work, so he attempted to steal it. Now, this is a guy making almost 15 bucks an hour at the kitchen we both worked at a few days a week, plus whatever Value Village is paying him. Even if it was minimum wage, the guy still has enough money coming in that he could afford the 12 bucks or whatever the fuck they were going to charge for this possibly broken and outdated video game system that really wasn't that great to begin with. I mean, I can think of a lot of better things to spend money on, but to each their own. What I'm saying is, it's not as if this guy was starving to death and stole a loaf of bread to survive. You may like video games, but you don't need video games to live. Anyhow, the toxic turd burglar got caught and fired. Looks fucking good on him, too. You have to be a special kind of scum to get caught stealing from Value Village. The worst part? The fucking dunce already had a GameCube. I wish I was making this up, but alas, it's sadly a true story. And one of the many that I have about Alan the Putrid Potato Head. Enough about that Cheeto-faced tug job. My next guest is Grammy Award-winning vocalist Lana Miles. She's a platinum-selling recording artist with her debut album alone, selling well over 6 million copies. This is the second part of our conversation. If you missed the first part of our chat, you'll find it on episode 22 of The Casey Ferguson Show, available at CaseyFergusonShow.com. In this part of our conversation, Lana opens up and clears the air about her spinal injury and health problems, her troubles with Atlantic Records, touring with Robert Plant, her early years, and more. This is the second part of my interview with Lana Miles on The Casey Ferguson Show.
Actually, I remember you saying in an interview that it cost $7 million for you to become a superstar.
Yeah, roughly $6-7 million. Yeah, that's how much it costs. About $3 million of the videos,
mm-hmm.
about, I'm guessing, maybe 2.75 worth of recording expenses, records. That's about, I'm guessing, 100 to 300,000 worth of, maybe even half a million, more like half a million, red carpets, promotion trips to Europe. You go to Europe and you go carte blanche, five-star hotels for 31 days in a row in Europe. That's about $250,000.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So you add it all up. And it's not hard to see where it went.
I mean, is that tour support in with that as well? Or?
They never gave me tour support. They refused.
Really?
The first $1 million I spent on my own tour in America, it cost me $1 million, really $1.5 million to tour my first year, 1990, to break my record in America. And they gave me no tour support money, but they gave, and I used the funds from touring and from the record sales, my advance, my $500,000 advance. They gave me no tour support money. Nothing.
Jesus, after all, just seeing what all the record did and, you know, like what you're selling, like what the hell?
They made between $60 and $80 million. And because of the way the contracts work, I wasn't allowed to be paid till I was recouped.
Right.
And I was no longer at the label. I was excommunicated. So 21 long years went flying by, and it took a long time to get over the bitterness of it all and the hardship, because I had to work my dogs off touring to make the kind of money that an artist like me in that status, an artist like that, has to make in order to keep the wolves away, lawyers and la 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 la. Anyway, and I pushed myself to the ground with the chiropractor, further pushed myself to the ground, maligned my spine, and left myself physically bereft. So it is what it is, and I'm slowly gaining ground, healing my body, taking time, and, you know, just catching my breath.
Well, how are you feeling these days? Because, I mean, I don't know if my listeners know what has gone on with you, so you might have to walk us through it a little bit. I know you've had some serious issues.
Yeah, I've been certainly challenged with spinal issues, and I tend not to, I don't make public appearances. I don't have anything that puts me out in front, and I'm not shy. If I do a concert, my fans know that's where it goes, and if those that don't, tough tilt, no, you don't like what you see, then don't come to the concert and don't buy the record. Can't help you.
Right.
I'm doing much better, and my condition is progressing, and I can't give you any more than the hope that it's not over for me, and I need more time for more rest and more healing.
Where would you say on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 1 being, you know, damn near dead, and 10 being, you know, excellent shape?
The low point probably happened a couple of years ago when the pain was so great it was unbearable, and it's turned itself around in the last couple of years now. So I'd say the pain I was in before compared to now, 75% better, between 75 and 80% better, but more livable, more manageable, more, I can, you know, do more, function better, you know. I'm not riding horses yet, but one day.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm glad to hear any improvement, you know.
A lot of decades of deprivation, of nutritional deprivation and emotional strain and financial, working ridiculous schedules to make a whole pile of people a lot more money that you never saw because of misappropriation of funds, et cetera, et cetera. It was never ending. It's a corrupt industry.
Hey, finally, you don't have to tell me.
Finally, I got rid of my management and all this and all that, and I finally started making money a few years ago. But then, you know, it was time for me to stop and rest, not think about having a career.
Well, I mean, we all have to do that at some point, right?
Yeah. You know, and I'm just taking a little longer rest, but I push myself a little harder than most, and I'm paying for it.
Well, I mean, I have to commend you because, I mean, you still go out and gig anyway. And I mean, that's just incredible. It's inspiring. And, it's really, shows you're a real tenacious person.
My voice didn't go away, and I'm determined, and I will pick up the gauntlet again when I'm ready. I'm not yet, but I'm getting there.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're doing at least a little bit better. I mean,
I'm doing a lot better.
Alana, I didn't know about...
I hid from the public because I didn't want to speak to them in the pain I was in, and so I was just remained stoic, and what they don't know won't kill them, and now I don't want pity.
Right, oh no, and I mean, I'm certainly not trying to pity you here. I'm think it's inspiring, and I had no idea all of what went on had gone on. I mean, I knew some of it, but I didn't know that it was, a car accident and falling off a horse and the chiropractor thing, and I was like, oh my God.
But it wasn't a car accident. It had little to do with my situation. My situation is because of not feeding myself properly and pushing myself to the ground for 20 years to try and stay above float, to try and stay with my expensive rent and costly monthly bills, and working weekend shifts in Europe, flying over on Friday and flying back on Sunday to grab a $10,000 gig here and there. But it was time for me to hang up the hat. The money allows people to have the security I did not have. It's not the car accident. It's got nothing to do with that. I had a car accident and it didn't injure me. I went to the chiropractor and used the car accident insurance on too many chiropractic treatments, which injured my spine.
Okay, well, I'm just going by what I read. Don't shoot the messenger.
I don't even know where that comes from.
Yeah, I don't know. I just read some articles online and they lump it all together into one big thing, right?
They all write their own truth. The truth of the matter is, I was suffering from literal exhaustion, from complete, inescapable exhaustion. So, whatever, what can you do?
No, fair enough. Well, I just, I didn't write it.
No, I'm not shooting the messenger either.
Okay, well, I appreciate you letting me know that that's not the case, though.
But I'm just clearing the record.
What's that?
You're getting a scoop.
Oh, no. Like I said, I appreciate it.
People have to fill in the blanks. They don't know, but I'm here to tell them.
Absolutely.
And those times are past, and it's a long road back.
Well, I'm glad you made it back to us. I really am. It's,
I haven't yet, but my life is far from over.
Oh, no, for sure. I'm just saying, again, any improvement is, is good. And I was watching this stuff last night, doing my research, and I'm just going like, wow, this shit kicks ass.
I just ventured to my challenges were my own, and I just chose to not go public with them. Just to remain private and heal on my own. Leave me the fuck alone. I've done my bit. I went out into the world and became super stupid ass famous. Now I need to rest. Now I need to be human and not have all those. Is it any different than someone like, and I certainly don't, I'm not comparing myself to someone like a Barbra Streisand, but is it any different than an agoraphobic Aretha or Barbara who stays away from the public eye because they feel the expectations of people are so great they cannot function?
Yeah, no, I can see that, yeah.
That's not really my personal situation. I worked in spite of myself, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Their fears conquered the better of them and prevented them. I worked in spite of it. In spite of it, which would only further damage me, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So, there you go.
Here's one for you. What was it like gigging alongside Robert Plant? I mean, that must have just been incredible.
Did you say getting inside?
Pardon?
I'm not sure of the question you asked.
Oh, I mean, just what was it like, gigging with a guy like Robert Plant?
I don't mean to sound all high and mighty because, who the hell am I? I'm just some girl from Toronto. But he's a nice man. He's a very talented man. I have no secrets to share because I've opted not to make my privacy with him in the years that I knew and spent with him publicly known any more than I do.
Oh, no, I'm not digging for dirt or anything here. I was just, great experience.
Yeah, he was quite something. He really had quite an extraordinary voice. There's no question about that.
Well, that was with the Manic Nirvana tour?
Yes, 1990. I opened for Robert in the States. And I was doing a club tour sporadically. And the record company hinted at some tour support money if I would go out on the road with Robert. I didn't want to. I fought not to. But I went with the idea of tour support, which never came. Instead, I spent. And I learned, you know, I never would have had the career I had had I not spent, you know, if I lived around for Atlantic, I wouldn't have had, it goes hand in hand. It works together.
Right.
You know, you have to be prepared to put as much blood and guts into it as they're prepared to put up the money.
Well, I suppose then in a situation like that, you're sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't, right?
Exactly.
Now, have you seen the video of young Christina Aguilera singing Black Velvet?
Yeah, it always disturbed me. Seeing a 9-year-old be sexual.
Yeah, it was a little strange, but I thought, you know, like her going on to be who she became and everything.
Well,
I mean, it's always got to be a little flattering at some point, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's nostalgic now. It's novel because she's such a wicked ass singer. But when she was 9, she really didn't do much justice to the song.
Right. Well, of course, sure.
So what am I supposed to say? It disturbed me because she was 9 and she was going, did it. And I'm going, I don't do that.
Yeah, it was a little strange.
I can't insult Christina Aguilera because she's got the voice of the gods. So whatever she did at 9, she sure as hell is doing a fine job of it now.
Well, hey, better than I was doing at 9.
Yeah, no, me too.
I hear that you did equestrian before you took off as a singer.
When I was a kid growing up, I was an equestrian. I showed, and I don't think that my family had the kind of endless supply of money to facilitate Olympian status that requires, but, and also I was compelled to sing. I studied acting, but basically in order to get the chops in front of the camera to sing, etc. And when I got signed by Atlantic in 1987-88, I made a conscious decision to go into the studio and give up acting and give up my $60,000 a year career. Well, that would have been about $150 now.
Right, with inflation, yeah.
So I gave it up. And lived on, I got $2,000 from Atlantic and Christopher supported me. But when you're not out working, there's no residuals coming in.
Right.
I used the skill. I took dance, I took voice, I took vocals, I took acting workshops, and then I was actually, my husband Tom uses dog corn and caulking around the house because it forms a tough 100% silicone rubber seal that lasts up 20 years. And you zoom back and there I was with a hard hat and a red check shirt on a high rise building. That was me. Killer, huh?
Wow.
I know. Hilarious. Anyway, I did tampon commercials for double and triple scale because there was money. But it all stopped when I got signed to Atlantic. That was that. It ended then. And then of course everybody in the acting world said, oh, well, you know, she was an artist. Yeah, well, you wouldn't give me a job. And of course they said, oh, you know, she was a jingle singer. Well, nobody would give me a jingle. So whatever.
Funny how it all works out, eh?
All right.
Not funny, ha-ha, maybe.
What's that?
I said maybe not funny like ha-ha, but...
I've learned to be very cynical, I think.
Well, you and me both. That's what fuels the show, I think.
I think so.
Part talk show, part rock show. You are listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. That was the second part of my conversation with multi-platinum selling recording artist Alanna Miles. I will have more from that conversation on a future episode of The Casey Ferguson Show, but moving right along, I think it's time to get back to the music. Here's some Canadian rock for you. This is 88 Mile Trip with their version of BTO's Not Fragile on The Casey Ferguson Show.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Cash.
He's Black Bart meets Mad Max.
He's Captain Hook. A little bit of cowboy, a little bit of metal, a little bit of rock and roll.
He would be the perfect description of, like, my dream dude for sure.
You're listening to The Casey Ferguson Show.
Covered in blood on your silence. What's to be done? They load up the guns on your violence. Sick of the good dying first. Too many more than it's worth. How many mothers in mourning and brothers in silence? Routine, what's the reason? They dance over graves, lay bombs like bouquets while we're grieving. Tell me the truth, though it hurts. We live in a world and it's cursed. But our generation won't have separation, we're fearless.
Can't wait to summer on recon. Can't wait. I've got this feeling in my soul. We've never really had control.
fussing, always cussing. You are listening to the Casey Ferguson Show.
He's not playing with a full deck.
Brand new music from KXM there, Scatterbrain. Before that was Aggression by Palisades, and kicking off that set was 88 Mile Trip with their rendition of Bachman Turner Overdrive's Not Fragile. You know, I don't consider myself fragile by any stretch. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm UFC tough either, but I'm no fucking Nancy. However, a notable exception would be getting hit in the naughty bits. Now, all you lads out there listening know what I'm talking about. Whether you get hit in the frank or the beans, that shit fucking hurts. It'll take you out quicker than a fucking shot, which is exactly what happened at one of my old jobs one day. There I am, meandering about, minding my own business, changing a garbage bag, when one of the lusty busty barista beauties decides she absolutely must get a tainted brick-sized brownie in this bag before I tie it. So she yells, "Hold on," and fires this scud missile of a brownie at me like she trained with Nolan fucking Ryan and hits me right in the ween. Well, I went down quicker than a $2 whore on a Saturday night. I writhed in pain on the unswept floor collecting dirt and pieces of brownie as I rolled. The barista gal hovered over me with her mouth open, a look of moderate concern on her face. I struggled to hold back my tears and forced out just a few words. "Did he look hungry?" So, there you have it. From Not Fragile to Fragile. This is Logan Brown on the Casey Ferguson Show.
To the other side of that magic trick penny. The game of life ain't so easy when rolling a bone keeps breaking up your wrist. Keep forgetting my lines, keep forgetting my lines. Don't think this play's big enough for the both of us. Have to borrow some lines from you, 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 and you. Oh. What you got for me? And that big old box marked fragile, fragile parts may contain small bits of broken glass. Don't go into that good, good night. Oh, you know we could be floating on. But if I left it all up to you, all up to you, we would just die. What you got for me? In that big old box marked fragile, fragile parts may contain small bits of broken glass. What's a boy to do when there's nothing left for you to prove? Let's just be true. You just bit off a little more than you could chew. What you got for me? In that big old box, my fragile, fragile parts may contain small bits of broken glass.
Greg from Ash Force Hi-Fi, you are listening to the Casey Ferguson Show.
My own just fell to a brand new low. It's now a never, and the words are caught in my throat. just didn't know I was hypnotized. And you tore me apart, left me to hang. Only company was the rain. But it's not your fault, and I'm not to blame. It's just the way we play the game. So hold me down. Tragedy. If you were me, might see things my way. Can't be proved wrong, you just move along. If you ever look back, you might see what you left in black. Water in my lungs has never felt so good. Finally be set free from all I've withstood. So kick me in the face, you know I love that taste. Leave no room for you to say grace. And hold me down just enough to drown. Dreaming with my eyes open now. Open up your mind, take a look inside. What do you even say?
We'll be right back.
Margaritas and Banging Senoritas. You're listening to The Casey Ferguson Show. Brand new music from Rat Stephen Piercy there. That was Jamie. Before that, you heard from Kira with Drown. And at the top of the set was Kingston, Ontario's own Logan Brown with Fragile. Logan will be my first guest on a brand new supplement to The Casey Ferguson Show entitled The Wood, Words, and Whiskey Sessions, live from Muziki Cafe. Here's the deal. Once a month, I'm going to have someone in to play a few songs and do an interview here at Muziki. This will be offered as another free download in addition to The Casey Ferguson Show at CaseyFergusonShow.com. I've already got Logan's performances and interview here, so I should have that produced and on the website very soon, so keep an eye out for that. Well, I hear a barstool calling my name downstairs, so I'm going to bid you lunatics farewell for now. I'd like to thank my guests, Reese Winans and Alana Miles. Thank you to all the bands and the reps for sending me some killer tracks to play for all of you. Thank you to my sponsors, and of course, thank you for listening. My apologies to Brent Nurse, we ran out of time, but hopefully we can tag up real soon. Liv Sin will play us out with a track called Let Me Out. Remember, justice without force is powerless. Force without justice is tyrannical. Until next time, this is Casey Ferguson, over and out.
Let me out!